Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Boys, there's a honeydew. Yeah.
That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, I have the lovely Dana Howe from the Island Creek Oyster Farm in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Good day, Damon.
Good day to you, too. So, two of my favorite things in the world are obviously drinking and eating oysters. And today we're going to talk about those two beautiful things coming together and making us all very, very happy. I have my own opinions on certain drinks that I like to pair with oysters, as do other people. Obviously, the classic ones are, you know, French white wines, yeah. Vodka.
Champagne.
And, you know, I like brandy, and I like tequila.
Sounds like you like everything.
I like everything. I don't really go for the vodka with the oyster pairing, but I have before, and it's pretty good way to go.
Some people do the oyster inside of the vodka, which I find sort of...
That's kind of weird.
It's kind of a bummer, mostly.
It's a super bummer. But yeah, there's, you know, obviously there's that style of like oyster shooters, mm-hmm. which typically tend to be like some sort of like Bloody Mary variation in a small shot.
Exactly. And the reason a lot of us don't love that is because it masks the flavor of the oyster. It's sort of like the point of eating an oyster raw is so you can really, you know, get that flavor. And when you cover it in cocktail sauce or Bloody Mary mix.
Right.
Yeah, it sort of shifts, becomes something else. Yeah. So.
And even like fried oysters, it's the same, kind of the same thing, you know?
Totally. Perfect for schwappy oysters.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about a, you know, sort of a pedigreed puritanical New England snooty delicious morsel.
Yeah.
You just want to kill it raw and eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you can save the deep frying and the charbroiling for, you know, when you're in New Orleans at Acme.
Yeah. and I've put down, you know, I've put Lots down my fair share of yeah. that. Yeah, for sure.
So tell us about Island Creek.
Island Creek is an oyster farm that's 4.5 hours north inside of the Cape Cod Bay. It's an exceptional place to grow oysters because it is very clean. So there's no large industrial center anywhere near it. And oysters filter up to 50 gallons of water a day. So one oyster, 50 gallons. It's pretty unbelievable when you really think about those numbers.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that your water is clean, very clean, because you're literally eating whatever is in the water. The other reason that Duxbury is sort of exceptional is that it has what we call an 11-foot tidal range. And that means literally 11 feet of water drop out of the bay twice a day at the low tides. So... that means that the new water that comes in, 70% of that water is brand new and full of algae, and it's cold, and the oysters love to eat, and it plumps them up really fast. And when the water is cold, it means the oysters don't spawn. Hmm. And spawning is basically just the oysters having sex. So
I know what spawning means.
Not everyone does. But... But yeah, so they, when the waters get warm, they put more energy into sex than they do into food. Hmm. You know, it's kind of, it relates very closely to our jacuzzi conversation earlier. Yeah. And so when the bay is very cold, they never spawn. And that means their flesh stays sort of tender, but not, I don't know, like crisp almost is a word people use. Hmm. So you can really sort of bite into it. It's got like a good tooth feel. Yeah.
And so When I last saw you,
there's so much to talk about.
We got
with
a lot
oysters.
To talk about.
I mean, it's...
when I last saw you, came to my bar, Prime Meats, and I did a presentation for the staff, which was great. And
yeah, it was great for me. It was like 20 men in lumberjack outfits, yeah. None of whom were lumberjacks, actually.
Well, you don't know.
They're all just posing.
You didn't talk to everyone.
It was a good look, though.
But so, what have you been up to since then? You just your job. You tend to travel around. You deal with a lot of the restaurants that use your oysters.
Yeah, we. It's kind of crazy. Oysters. It gets you into a lot of sort of funky situations. And let's see. We recently, the Island Creek family is sort of a hodgepodge of insane people. Most of us are actually from Duxbury. I was raised right on Island Creek.
Oh, wow.
And I live there now. And but they definitely know how to have a good time. We recently opened up a restaurant of our own called the Island Creek Oyster Bar. And you said you knew the bartender, Jackson, I believe. Mm-hmm. So they put us up. We had a farm outing.
Boston.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry. It's in Boston in Kenmore Square. And it's pretty awesome place. We're pretty happy with it. And every once in a while, we motivate out of Duxbury. So it's about a 45-minute drive. And this recent time, we had a little staff outing, which included a large party bus, which carried 20 people. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Party bus.
We headed up in the party bus, and we sat down at the restaurant. We had a long banquet table right in the middle of the restaurant. Everyone was kind of like, who are they? You know? Yeah, it was like fancy time for the farmers. And we had a very large, to my eyes, suckling pig on one end of the table. And then on the right side of the table, we had, I would guess it's about a 35 to 40 pound striper.
Wow.
Whole cooked. So nice. Just a beautiful striped bass, which tasted, if you haven't had that in a while, really just reminded me how much I love that fish. And then in the center, we had a silver tray placed in front of us with 30 shots of Fernet.
Nice. Perfect.
It got very ugly.
I'm sure.
I have a few regrets. But I was really happy that I'm smart enough and I'm wise enough that I didn't go to the strip club after hours, because there were a few people who did that, and then they were sort of abandoned by the bus and kind of wandering around Boston.
Oh, like, no. Well, these people from Duxbury in
yep,
Boston.
Yep. Taxi cab ride home.
Yeah. How much was that?
It was it was only like $125.
Oh, that's cool.
All things considered. You know?
Oh, man.
Could have been worse.
Yeah, but, much worse.
Yeah, but they, you know, people that are involved with oysters, probably a lot like people that are involved and love good liquor, they're sort of excessive and eccentric.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends up sort of creating a strange atmosphere in which they're consumed.
That makes sense to me. I mean, especially with so many places, restaurants and bars, established places have been around for a long time, starting to bring on oyster programs, and also like new places that have popped up, you know, like Maison Premier and even Prime Meats and a bunch of other places.
Yep.
New places that start out with pretty killer like oyster programs and raw bar programs. It just makes sense, like the citric, like you said, this people like, that are into cocktails and into it, it is very, it's. It's also a very, like, kind of a luxurious thing, you know, not everyone...
It is. Well, one way someone described it to me, which actually when they were describing Maison, and they were describing Christoph, the proprietor, that he was saying, you know, he's a collector.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the perfect word for me, because it's like, yeah, whether it's, you know, okay, so we collect records, or we collect eccentric varieties of oyster, or mm-hmm. smaller batches of liquor. FYI, this is an amazing experience here.
Oh, yeah, we should. We've been talking about oysters for 10 minutes, and we haven't had one yet.
I'm drinking away anyways. Oh, yeah, please have one.
Cool.
But it is, it's really a collector sort of thing. We're eating oysters now, and it's... So we should talk about... I don't want to forget.
Oh, my God, that was delicious.
I don't want to forget like how important it is to talk about my favorite thing about oysters, which is that when you eat an oyster at an excellent place, they're opening them mm-hmm. as you're ordering them. And When you sever the adductor muscle, which is the muscle that holds the oyster together, the oyster is still alive after that. Mm-hmm. So ideally, you're eating the oyster when it's still living. And there's some very interesting quality that one acquires when one is eating a living being.
Yeah.
It's not just because I'm a yoga teacher.
Yeah. It's, I you know, when I first started eating oysters, which is about, I hate to say it, but I mean, being from you know, a small town in Oklahoma, you know, the closest thing we were going to get were Gulf oysters, and you don't necessarily mm-hmm. want those, unless they're, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you know, deep fried or some other preparation. But I didn't start eating oysters until I moved to New York City. And then when I finally discovered them, like, I guess 4 years ago, I just went crazy with them. And it's kind of like the first time you do anything.
Do what?
Yeah. First time you do anything, it's always kind of like the best.
Anything.
I remember just going crazy and having like at least a dozen and a half or two dozen of them. And I never will forget that, like, kind of crazy endorphin rush from doing that. You know, like, having that, first of all, that many oysters in a sitting, but also just, like, the way it makes you feel. It's crazy. It's, like, it's very energizing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people chalk it up to the sort of, like, genital likeness of the oyster.
Ew.
Which, yeah, I was never really sold on that concept. But the fact that it's actually a living creature and... like we were talking about earlier. It's, what were we talking about earlier? Oh, that when you have, you know, two or three, which is great, you may notice something, but when you start to work into 10, 20, 30, like if you come up to the farm, which everyone is welcome to.
I will definitely be doing that.
Because we're up there and we do farm tours and we have a what we call an oysterplex. We were actually just featured in Food and Wine magazine. Mm-hmm. In July, our oysterplex was sort of the focal point for the story about how it's basically a garage on a dock
it's
in
like
the middle of the
garage,
bay.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a floating garage with solar panels, and we often just kind of pull up there and have drinks and have oysters, and when you're sitting on the plex and you have like 20 to 30 oysters, a couple drinks.
That's and living.
Yeah, we had recently an oyster stout brewed for us by Harpoon. So we had excessive amounts of that stout around, which felt sort of strange in the summer, I have to say. But
see, that's something that I've always wondered. Like, I never really got the connection. And like we were talking about before the show, like, I never really got the connection of stouts and oysters, but it seems to be a popular pairing. And I don't know. You know, I like cognac with oysters, but a lot of people would say that's weird too.
Yeah.
But is it just like a super traditional thing to have? And where the hell did that come from anyway? Was it just by accident?
I don't really know, I have to say. I mean, there's something about a stout that I don't know the exact words, but it's not like a sweet, heavy thing. There's like that sort of restrained quality to them. You know what I mean?
It's almost like a palate. I mean, I get the...
So it sort of works. Yeah, so I think it sort of works. It doesn't kill the oyster in that way. Like, if you had a crazy, hoppy California beer, it would just...
Right.
It would just overwhelm even the brine or any of the experience you're having. But, so that's one guess. But, you know, I'm from New England, so a lot of... Like, a lot of some of the traditions that we find we have, which we think are so interesting and new, are really just, like, Scottish or British traditions.
Right.
You know, so it's sort of transparent, like, oh, yeah, well, you were drinking a lot of Guinness.
Exactly.
And you were eating a lot of oysters, you know? So it could be as sort of simple as that.
Yeah. Cool.
But like we said before, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to eat and drink, you know, with oysters. And, like, stout really works, but... A great pilsner, like a really light pilsner, is great. And this cognac is,
it's good, right?
It makes a lot of sense.
I mean, like,
here, please have more oysters.
I'm totally gonna have another.
We should be eating, like, we should have at least.
Yeah, we got
to
crush
each.
At least. Yeah. This we're drinking the it's a 50-year-old Hardy cognac, which
it's tragic.
Just brought. Yeah, we're having a terrible time here in the studio today, but. It's cool because the fruit of this cognac actually dropped out a lot. It's still there, but like that overly sweetened kind of thing that a lot of people like the caramely kind of thing that people really associate with cognac is kind of dropped out. And the finish of this is actually very clean and very long. So it is, in its own way, like a palate cleanser. And that's why I like cognac with oysters.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about what we're doing right now, I mean, we just should keep going on it to see what keeps happening as it evolves. But these oysters are slightly warm. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been in my cooler. They're fine. But when you have a warmish oyster, like, there's more flavor. So it's kind of, it has this gamey sort of like, whoo, damn, you know,
yeah,
hello.
Yeah.
But you also, you get to fully experience like the actual flavor of the oyster. And that's pretty nice with this cognac. Like, it's pretty,
right?
There's a lot happening.
A lot going on.
Yeah,
here.
But it's a lot of good stuff.
It's the same thing as a, you know, like white wine. People drink it just super, super cold, but it's really nice to like let it warm up so you can actually get the...
Exactly. And I think with oysters, a lot of people shy away from that, primarily because they taste like they're from the ocean.
Yeah.
And if you don't like that, you don't want to taste them, you know? I mean, yeah. They are one of the truest expressions of the water.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a little cup of ocean.
Well, it is.
let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll be joined again, still, by Dana Hell from Island Creek Oyster Farm.
Yeah.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have Dana Hell from Island Creek Oyster Farm in Duxbury, Massachusetts. We've been talking about oysters and cocktails and pairings and actually enjoying all those things, too, at the same time. And, of course, our producer, Jack Inslee, thought it'd be funny to play Blue Oyster Cult. and I made a cocktail while we were on the break, too. And I guess I'm going to call this one the More Cowbell cocktail. This one is something like a lot of people will typically pair a, like you were saying earlier, like vodka, gin, but, you know, obviously martinis. And so mm-hmm. I just made a quick little variation on a martini. Actually, this one's like kind of a variation on a classic cocktail called the Fourth Degree. Couple ounces of Tanqueray gin, 1 ounce of Coqui Americano, which is kind of similar to the original Lillet Blanc recipe, a couple dashes of chartreuse grand elixir vegetal, and then lemon zest. And it's very, very vegetal, herbaceous, and it's working okay with these oysters, but I'm going to go back to the cognac.
No, I think, well, one interesting thing about pairing any alcohol with oysters is that we talk about oysters as if they're one thing. Mm-hmm. But there are so many different things.
Right.
And, you know, a West Coast oyster can taste like fruity pebbles and have no brine. And, you know, so it can be...
Get it?
Yeah. So a West Coast oyster can have this fruity taste, and then an East Coast oyster can have a strong brine. Or in the case of Island Creek, the way we generally describe the oyster is that it has a brinier up front. And then in the middle, there's sort of things happening, but there's kind of a pause. And then at the end, you start to work on the adductor muscle, and the sweetness at the end starts to really reveal itself. And so that is to say, there's so many different types of oysters and flavors of oysters. So what would work with the cognac wouldn't work with this amazing drink that you made, which is pretty, I think it works really well, actually. Oh, cool. And I'm not just kissing your ass because, you know, we're on the radio. But yeah, so it really depends.
Don't lie.
I know. So it really depends on the where you're getting your oyster from.
And even the temperature as well, like we were talking about before the break. You know, you get... I used to manage a Japanese bar, and, you know, like the different levels of temperature for sake, you know, you can get totally different flavors out of the same sake. But it's true with any kind of wine or spirit, you know, at the same time. Even, you know, when you put a little bit of water into a spirit, it really breaks down the chemicals, or not the chemicals, the compounds, and it makes the spirit blossom.
Right.
And... yeah, it's really neat to try these paired together, especially in a city like New York City. We were talking about earlier, you know, with so many cocktail bars, with raw bars, and how it's become more and more of an accessible thing. And also, there's just so much more education on it, you know, along with any kind of food nowadays. And like saying before, you know, like you came into Primates and did a nice presentation. The Oysterplex was one of my favorite parts of the of the presentation. It's kind of cool, like in a city like New York, going back to that, it's like we have like access to really great food, really great oysters, really great spirits and cocktails. And there's a really great book by
Mark Kurlansky,
The Big Oyster.
The Big Oyster.
And it's about New York City back
in the
day.
It's about oysters. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like as much about New York City as it is about oysters.
Right.
And what's beautiful about that is that the two grew so steadily, or existed so steadily together for so long, that a history of New York is a history of oysters, and a history of oysters is a history of New York.
Yeah, it was like one of the cool things in that book that I found is like how the East River used to freeze over so much, and people would just actually walk out on the river and grab oysters.
Yeah, we still do that in the Duxbury Bay. The ocean freezes over, but we need to harvest, so we actually walk out onto the ice and we take chainsaws and we open up the ice and literally stick our hands down and pull out oysters from the ice. Totally dangerous, not advised. But it's the Big Oyster is really an incredible book. It gives you such an appreciation for, I mean, literally, there were piles of oysters. People just picked oysters right from the ocean. They were basically sticking out of the water. They were so abundant.
They were huge.
I don't know if you've heard of this project in Gowanus. I forget the name of it, but they're putting oysters back into the Gowanus River.
Are you kidding me? I live like a half a block from there. That's so weird.
Yeah, I had no idea. It's a big project. There's a talk on TED. Good old TED about it.
Yeah.
And they're actually throwing a bunch of oysters in there in an attempt to clean it out. So the oysters will be filtering the water. Of course, nobody will be consuming those oysters,
because
that would be a really bad idea. But they do have
bait
the,
for fishing.
No, that would all. I mean, those oysters will like glow in the dark at this point,
exactly.
You know. But they're cleaning the water, and the oysters do have that regenerative. Maybe it's the cognac. I'll blame that. They have that capability.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat. Although the farmers of Duxbury, when they saw that TED talk, I made them all watch it, of course. And they were all like, that's bull. Can I say shit?
You say bullshit.
Okay,
you can say whatever you want.
Bullshit.
You can say fuck.
Okay.
Whatever you want.
That's fucking bullshit. What the fuck, motherfucker? No. They were kind of laughing at it because they thought, okay, yeah, in another like 2 millennia, I'm sure that river will be clean. But I felt like, why be skeptical? I think that's like an amazing thing.
It's a really interesting idea
doing.
For cleaning up
absolutely.
The Gowanus Canal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to go back to this. Like, when you talk about farming oysters, like being on an oyster farm, what does that all entail? I'd like to talk a little bit more about the process of that.
Yeah, so there's basically, oysters do grow wild. So there's that. But we ate a lot of them in the 1800s and early 1900s. We enjoyed the hell out of oysters.
To the extent
that we consumed them all, and we procreated and we dominated the earth. So we find ourselves in a position where we're starting to farm oysters. And one of the best things about that is it's one of the most sustainable ways to eat shellfish or seafood in existence today is farmed oysters. And basically, it's just like any farm. We buy seed. The oysters are the size of a pepper flake. They're grown in hatcheries where the water is warm and there's algae constantly being pumped through, and there's special like mood music that only oysters.
That only oysters
it's
can
very
hear.
Sexy, yeah. and so then we buy the seed, and we put the seed in what we call an upweller. So it's basically a set of window screens underwater, and the water just comes through the window screens. The oysters eat and eat and eat, and they grow about 20 times their size in about a month. And then we put them in cages for another 3 months, and that's basically so nobody can eat them. They grow to about the size of a silver dollar, and then at that point, a little bit bigger, we throw them on the boat, and we take a snow shovel. We drive the boat around, and we throw them overboard. And that's where they sit for the next year and a half. Wow. And then when we harvest them, literally we walk around. Like today, we had a really low tide in the morning, and we walked around and we handpicked oysters.
You were just doing that this morning.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The tides are great. When the tides are really low, it's the best way to harvest. And then when the tides are higher, we do things like dredge the oysters, which is basically a rake. But what's cool about oyster farming, you know, you think about a dredge, and people have a lot of opinions about that because it sounds like a really awful thing. And actually, in many cases, it is. But in the case of the oyster farms, the land was only given when it was determined to be fallow. So the land that the oysters are grown on was already known to be non-productive land. So there's nothing that's like coming up in the dredge that's harming the environment. So overall, it's a really sustainable, really delicious, you know, and it is sort of fancy. It's fancy. It's fun. But it's also, I mean, it's white collar, blue collar. Like,
I love,
it's
yeah,
everything,
I love it. It's like,
you know?
There's a lot of dirty work that goes into to making these delicious things happen.
Yeah. And you know, it's just like my grandfather was a lobsterman. And lobster is a wonderful delicacy, but it's like, you know, they had lobster and Kellogg's flakes, lobster and mac and cheese, lobster and Cape Cod potato chips, like, because that was the cheapest food around. So yeah. It's sort of that like highbrow, lowbrow mix.
Yeah, exactly.
It's part of what makes it really compelling.
It's like cheese and charcuterie, mm-hmm. You know, it's all like peasant food.
Exactly.
And now we think of it as delicacies.
Exactly.
So... Today, are you going to be going around the city and talking more about oysters and visiting some of the restaurants? And
Here.
Thank you. Or are you going to keep chucking oysters for me?
Yeah, I'd like to just take all these oysters and chuck them for everyone here. I mean, that's it's really my greatest value. But yeah, in the city, I don't know. You know, I'm from Duxbury, so I tend to blow it out when I'm in the city.
Yeah.
And about 3 days of that, and I'm like... finished.
Back to Duxbury.
but I love, yeah, I we sell to a bunch of restaurants here, and we don't only sell Island Creeks, we sell a lot of other oysters too that come from Cape Cod, basically friends of ours, mm-hmm. And we sell razor clams and clams, which is a whole other conversation, because razor clams are just bizarre.
Yeah.
And amazing.
I was going to ask that, actually, when we're talking about, because I last time I was in Boston, I didn't get a chance to go by Island Creek. I'm not sure it was actually open at the time, but I did go to Eastern Standard.
We're right next door.
Stayed at the Commonwealth, and I know you guys are next door.
Wow.
And I was wondering about that. If you open a restaurant, it's like, do you only exclusively sell your oysters? Obviously not.
No.
But
it's such a celebration of oysters. It's like there's so many different ways to consume them and types of oysters. And so we probably have like 12 to 15 varieties on the menu.
Yeah.
It's a really nice selection. But it's one of the first restaurants that I know of in Boston, that's truly, it's not just farm to table. I mean, it is a farmed restaurant.
Yeah.
So when my guys catch a bluefish on the fly, or they have extra lobsters in their trap, they go up to the restaurant. So the restaurant literally gets an influx of periwinkles and is like, great, what am I going to do with these? So it's nice. Like, it's a whole different dynamic, actually.
Cool. That's great. I mean, like one of my past guests on the show, Allie Shaper from Brooklyn Enology, she has a tasting room. at their facilities. And same thing, you know, it's a celebration of everyone doing really cool stuff. She has not only her own great line of wines there, but also other local producers that she really digs, you know. At the times, she'll have, you know, a number of different people there. And yeah, some food and everything is, like, local and, like, together and makes really great, great scene. And I think that's really cool that you guys do that, too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, it was one of the things when I lived in San Francisco, you know, I used to kind of hate on the local movement because it was so fierce. And I just got, like, I had this moment of being like, you know, people stop.
People can be really snobby about
it. But at the end of the day, like, this, our movement that we've created, our generation towards, like, food and farming and young farmers, and it's revealed itself in some pretty incredible ways. Like, the farmers of Island Creek live in America, and they make enough money to exist. And they make a great product. And it's, like, from every side, it's just, like, something that everyone can feel really good about, and it's community.
That's great. I feel really good about having you on the show today, and it's been my absolute pleasure.
Me too.
And I'm almost six oysters deep now, and I think that now we should go have 30 shots of Fernet.
Okay. Well, if you insist.
Okay. Well, please come back on the show sometime, Dana.
I would love to.
It's been lovely having you here.
We'll do razor clams next time.
Absolutely. That's it for the Speakeasy today. We'll see you next week. I'm Damon Boldy. Cheers.
That look in his eyes. Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high. Look at that look in his eyes. Man, I wouldn't lie.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The Heritage Meat Shop has just opened in the Essex Street Market. Open from 9 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 10 to 6 on Sundays, the Heritage Meat Shop supports independent family farms and animal welfare approved and certified humane raising standards. Most importantly, they offer a wide variety of heritage breeds. So stop by, get a sandwich, try the charcuterie. The Heritage Meat Shop at the Essex Street Market.